Both Hoffman and von Zahotsky, whom he'd consulted for his paper, were struck by the lack of other cases. For USRC, it was clear evidence of why the girls' illnesses could not possibly be occupational. Hoffman and von Zahotsky, however, who were convinced that dial painting was the cause of the girls' sickness, did what any scientist would do. They looked for a reason. And when von Zahotsky gave Hoffman the top-secret paint formula, they believed they had found it. Von Zahotsky gave me to understand, Hoffman later said, that the difference between the paste used in the plant in Orange and the paste used elsewhere was mesothorium. Mesothorium, radium-228, and not radium, at least not the radium-226 that people used in their tonics and pills. Well, that had to be the answer. And so Hoffman, building on Dr. Bloom's work, commented in his paper, "It has seemed to me more appropriate to use the term radium mesothorium necrosis." In conclusion, it wasn't, not exactly, radium that was to blame. However, when news of Hoffman's report hit the headlines, the radium industry fought back. Radium was still the wonder element, and new products were being launched all the time, one such right there in Orange. A highly radioactive tonic called Radithor, produced by William Bailey of Bailey Radium Laboratories, a client of USRC, had been launched in early 1925. He and others spoke out publicly against the attempts to link radium to the dial painters' deaths. "It is a pity," Bailey said, "that the public are being turned against this splendid curative agency by unfounded statements." But while the radium men were quick to strike back, Hoffman's paper, although it attracted some publicity, was a rather niche, specialist publication. Not many people subscribed to the Journal of the American Medical Association. And who was Frederick Hoffman anyway? Not a physician who might really know about these things. Even the women's allies were aware of his lack of authority. "It seems to me unfortunate," wrote Alice Hamilton to Wiley, "that Dr. Hoffman is the man to make this situation public. He does not command the confidence of physicians, and the work that he does will not be thorough nor proof against attack." What the women needed was a champion, a medical mastermind, someone who could not only command authority, but also, perhaps, find a way of definitively diagnosing their disease. Bloom had had his suspicions, Barry too, but neither of them had actually proved that radium was the cause. Most importantly of all, they needed a doctor who wasn't in the pocket of the company. Sometimes, the Lord works in mysterious ways. On 21st of May, 1925, a Newark trolley car was trammelling along its tracks on Market Street when there was a commotion on board. The commuters, making their way home in the evening rush hour, made room for the passenger who had suddenly collapsed to the floor. They called out to give him some air, for the trolley car to stop. A kindly passerby no doubt bent to mop his brow. It was all in vain. Only a few minutes after the man had first been stricken, he died. His name was George L. Warren. In life, he had been the county physician for Essex County, a senior medical figure with responsibility for the welfare of all residents within the county's borders, which included those in Newark as well as in Orange, the locations where former dial painters were now dying unstoppably. With Warren's passing, his position became vacant. The role of county physician, what would become the powerfully titled chief medical examiner, was now open. Whoever filled it would make or break the case. End of CD 4.